Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Good morning, I'm Roland Martin. Next on News One Now, 28 days before Election Day, Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump dealing with drama in their various camps. Trump, the issue of, frankly, assaulting women, or what he calls locker room talk. Clinton, when it comes to damaging emails that the Americans say have been leaked by the Russians. Donald Trump also slapped with nearly two dozen lawsuits accusing him and his companies of mistreating women. We'll talk with a reporter from USA Today who broke the story. Also, Ajamu Baraka, the running mate of Green Party presidential candidate Jill Stein, laid out his plan to help America. He'll join us on the show to share his thoughts with us. Plus, Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, she said it is dumb, the protest that Colin Kaepernick is engaged in with the national anthem. She might be respected, but she's dead wrong. We'll explain. Plus, National Retirement Readiness Week is a few days away, and America's Wealth Coach Deborah Owens is here with tips to help you retire in comfort. Today's Wealthy You. Plus, after 7, talks new music right here, right now. Let's bring the funk on News One Now TV One.
Well, you never saw anything like that before.
We had a lot of fun. And I would say that Hillary is highly overrated. Highly.
Now, I'll tell you what. Donald Trump spent his time attacking when he should have been apologizing.
During the course of 90 minutes, she was exposed and her failures were exposed. She had no defense. All she could do was lie.
When he was pressed about how he behaves, he just doubled down on his excuse that it's just locker room banter. Well, I'll tell you what. Women and men across America know that is just a really weak excuse for behaving badly and mistreating people.
If they want to release more tapes saying inappropriate things, we'll continue to talk about Bill and Hillary Clinton doing inappropriate things. There are so many of them, folks.
To paraphrase my friend Michelle Obama, one of us went high and one of us went low.
Well, that was Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton yesterday in two different rallies, firing up their base after Sunday's debate, which some call Sunday's debacle. Trump's lewd comments are costing him a big points in the polls. Clinton has an 11% lead in the latest NBC News Wall Street Journal poll. Politico has a new poll out this morning, also show her expanding her lead, 42-37. Trump losing a point, her picking up a point. Gary Johnson picking up a couple of points and Jill Stein staying even. Now, Trump's troubles don't end there as members of the Republican Party are fighting each other on whether to stand by him. House Majority Leader, Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, says he will no longer defend Donald Trump. During a conference call, Ryan reportedly told Republican lawmakers he would never again campaign for Trump and would focus on defending the party's majority in Congress. Trump dismissed Ryan's announcement by tweeting, quote, Paul Ryan should spend more time on balancing the budget, jobs, and legal immigration and not waste his time on fighting the Republican nominee. But looks like Trump's running mate, Governor Mike Pence of Indiana, is sticking around. Pence says he was pleased with Trump's apology during the debate about the 2005 tape with those lewd comments. He says Trump's apology was heartfelt and genuine.
My running mate, he showed the American people wasn't at heart. He showed humility to the American people. And then he fought back and turned the focus to the choice that we face. And I'm proud to stand with Donald Trump.
Republican National Committee echoed Pence's statement, saying nothing has changed in their relationship with Trump and they support his campaign. As for Secretary Clinton, the WikiLeaks email hack continues to plague her campaign. WikiLeaks released 2,000 more emails from her campaign chairman, John Podesta. The emails from September 2007 to March 2016 show folks close to the couple pushed for former President Bill Clinton to be less involved with his wife's campaign because of his past affairs. And the Clinton Foundation's chief operating officer may have being suicidal over the stress from the former president's demands. Another email shows the Clintons' relationship with Goldman Sachs and how it helped the foundation with additional office space. Clinton's campaign has not responded to the latest leak. Now, of course, we also know that the intelligence officials in the U.S. say it is highly likely that Russian intelligence, they are behind the various leaks. And Democrats have accused Putin and Russian officials of working closely with Donald Trump. President Obama will head to North Carolina, which will be his first in a series of stops in key battleground states to stump for Hillary Clinton. Joining me in the studio, A. Scott Bolden, defense attorney and partner for Reed Smith Law Firm, George Jefferson Newry, founding CEO in the Public Eye Communications, Eugene Craig III, vice chair of the Maryland Republican Party. Folks, Kurt Eichenwald with Newsweek has a report where yesterday Trump was citing intelligence from Russia about Sidney Blumenthal writing an email basically saying that the Benghazi probe was going to be a problem. Well, actually, Eichenwald wrote that actual story. Mm-hmm. And so he says that Russian intelligence essentially took his story and then put it on a Sidney Blumenthal email. But Trump comes out and literally recites the very information from that document. Right. He says it is clear you have an alliance between Russian intelligence, these hackers, and the Trump campaign.
Well, Donald Trump, nothing's believable when it comes to Donald Trump and the Russians, whether it's his taxes or whether he's got a relationship with Russia or not. That certainly needs to be explored, and it needs to be explored, investigated now as opposed to later, whether it's his relationship with the Russian oligarchs or the fact that he's got this information. But I think the bigger story is the misinformation and the impact of Russia's efforts to influence this election. And on Election Day, whether they are able to hack into the various state voting machines, I think
not. And hackers have tried in four states.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because this is the pretest, if you will, to see whether they can do on a larger basis. And so I think the integrity of the voting, not voter fraud, but the integrity of the voting with the Russians is going to be a bigger issue.
Eugene, what's amazing is that in the debate, Donald Trump literally defended Russia against intelligence reports saying they're behind it. This is a guy who's getting daily intelligence briefings. He defends Russia, saying, oh, we don't know it was them. Yeah. It could have been Iran.
It's bananas. It's crazy. He not only defended Russia, but then he turned around and parted ways with his VP, who, you know, when he was a member of Congress, Mike Pence was, you know, on the Syrian issue, which we know Russia is on the other side that we're on. You know, Donald Trump, I mean, he's
And many Middle Eastern experts have made it clear, Russia is not fighting ISIS. They want to keep Assad in
absolutely.
Power.
You know, Russia likes to have
puppets. I even had to smack Piers Morgan around, former CNN host, who's carrying all kind of Trump water, and I'm going, dude, are you that dumb?
Yeah. I think Piers Morgan is that dumb, but that's my opinion. But, you know, Donald Trump,
good opinion.
He's carrying the water for Russia, but that's not surprising. Paul Manafort was his former campaign chairman, and we all know that Manafort carried the water in Ukraine for Russia.
But we also know Russia is bombing Aleppo, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
I agree with you that this is a very serious issue. And I think that as a nation, we're not paying attention to it at the level we should. Donald Trump stood on a podium and said, I'm inviting Russia to come look for Hillary Clinton's emails.
Right.
That was inviting a foreign body to come into our
espionage.
Espionage. That's a serious problem. My concern now is not just this election. But this is a process that will continue.
Of course.
This is a process that will get very big. And when people are into our internet, our webs, where they can come in and do this, they can shut us down. And I think we should take it very seriously and invest a lot of investigative background to get it done.
But Eugene, energy. Let's look at the numbers here. Bottom line is you see a shift in the polling
absolutely.
From Friday, from the debate.
Yep.
The point that I keep making is that it's not a question of can Hillary Clinton add 2-3 points. Every point makes a difference in a tight
difference.
Election.
Yep.
And so she picked up a couple of points at the first debate, picked up a point or two after this one. You have a third debate. This lead can simply widen as a result.
I feel like this, if this lead widens and the generic congressional poll continues to widen, you know, the House may be in play, and, you know, that's our last saving grace as Republicans. I mean, you know, if this lead, if Hillary Clinton leads continue to widen, you know, we lose folk, good folk like Will Hurd and Carlos Cabello, you know, who are absolutely amazing congressmen.
Mia Love is struggling big time in Utah.
Yeah.
Utah, a reliably red state.
May go blue.
There has been no candidate this close to the election that has come back and won in the history of the country. Candidates who are this far behind, like Dole in 92, they don't come back. And I'm wondering, I'm asking Eugene, are you a Trump supporter?
Absolutely not.
Oh, no, he's been on. He's been on many times.
Absolutely not.
But Scott, here's the thing, though, that I still say. Polls are one thing. Folks who actually vote or another. Yeah. Intensity matters. Right. The Hillary Clinton campaign still has to contend with the intensity, lack of intensity among millennial voters. Yep. And you see Donald Trump's supporters, they do not care. One guy, there was an interview I did with the Young Turks where this guy said if Donald Trump was convicted of rape, he would still vote for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you know, there are other issues. You're absolutely right about that. Get out the vote is super important. But the Republican Party is in disarray. And because it's in disarray, they don't have a ground game. And we all know getting out the vote, knocking and dragging voters to the polls is going to be key.
But again, when you have intensity on your side, you don't need someone to convince you to come out. And that's where Trump is. But the bigger issue
hold on, is that guys. It's not necessarily get out the vote. It's more so that these Trump supporters, there's this undercurrent white vote that's supposed to be magically there. These aren't registered voters. They may come out to a Trump rally, but they aren't registered voters.
But that's only
real quick.
Only 15 to 20. 20 million votes, it's not enough. And her rise in the polls are because educated white suburban voters are rolling her way.
I will say this again. It's irrelevant. If you sit at home and rely on polls and say they won't turn out and then you don't, then you might be for a surprise on election day. I got to lay out the next story here, folks. Just as Donald Trump tries to get his campaign back on track after the release of a damaging tape of him making sexist remarks about women, some describe also sexual violence, there's a new report in USA Today. And the Republican presidential nominee and some of his companies are being accused of mistreating women in at least 20 lawsuits. USA Today reports several women have testified that Trump often instructed managers at his Los Angeles golf club to hire younger, attractive female workers. Two other women claim they were fired when they complained of being sexually harassed by co-workers. One woman who worked at Trump's Miami resort, Doral, alleges that she lost her job because she became pregnant. Joining me now is one of the journalists who broke the story, Steve Riley, investigative reporter for USA Today. Steve, glad you're here. When you see these reports, so these were actual depositions taken? Or these women have actually gone on the record?
Many of the cases, yes. Yes.
And so what are they laying out? So when they say Trump instructed, are they presenting documentation, his testimony? What are they basing that on?
Unlike in the video, you know, you can viscerally hear Donald Trump in the video we've all seen. This is documentary evidence and sworn testimony in lawsuits from workers at his facilities who say either managers at those facilities or Donald Trump himself in some cases discriminated against them and either ignored workplace harassment complaints or participated themselves in some cases.
Now, with these 20 lawsuits, are they against 20 different locations or are they lawsuits from 20 different women?
They're spread out across the Trump Organization business empire. And a couple lawsuits, you know, include multiple allegations from different class action suits. So there are more than 20 women involved in these lawsuits.
What has been the response thus far from the Trump Organization?
The Trump Organization says, you know, it's a large business. They say this is a relatively small number of lawsuits. Is that their response? That was. We reached out to the Trump Organization, and they said that's, you know, for a company of our size, this is a small number of lawsuits. It's hard to make an apples-to-apples comparison with another company. There's none exactly like that one, but the allegations are pretty stark in themselves.
What else has been revealed through the testimony of these women?
So it shows, you know, in some cases, Donald Trump himself was accused of ordering the workers to hire quote unquote younger and prettier employees at a golf resort. In other cases, you know, sexual harassment complaints reached up to the level of a manager, and there was allegations that the employee was fired as a result of lodging those sexual harassment complaints at the companies.
Scott, when you look at these allegations, look at these lawsuits, again, if you are the opposition to Trump, you are laying out a pattern.
Absolutely.
That what this guy, comments that he's made, now you have these lawsuits, that this is something that is consistent about his character.
Absolutely. And he drives a narrative in every one of those buckets that you just described. He drives a narrative. And for a billionaire who's the CEO of multiple companies, some of the allegations about him talking to waitresses or talking to managers, asking them whether they are happily married or not, it is really base conduct. Women are a protected class under the law, state and federal law, and firing them because they don't look a certain way or because they've gained weight, and my goodness, because they're pregnant, is textbook sexual harassment, textbook sexual discrimination, and ought not be tolerated. But it's about power. You see, this narrative is all about power, not necessarily sex. Sexual predation is about power. And so this goes again to the temperament and him being unfit for office and his relationship, his emotional and mental and professional relationship with women, which is never good and always on the negative side.
Joy?
I think that what Donald Trump calls locker room talk is a philosophy, because there's a lot of things you can talk about in a locker room. And it is a philosophy around how he feels his celebrity allows him to treat women.
But he talked about what he did.
He talked about what he did.
Now,
what I'm saying, it's a philosophy he lets play out. Mm-hmm. And I'm not falling for the line that says, oh, I've never done it, I'm just talking about it. Because there's a lot of things you could talk about in a locker room that is not grabbing a woman's private part.
Lying about it.
Right.
You're lying about that.
Right.
Who lies about sexual predation?
So my point is he's setting an environment.
As somebody that has played in locker rooms, somebody that has played sports, played basketball, football, track, that is not locker room talk. And I think the most interesting part about the backdrop about this whole entire video being dropped is literally 24 hours before the video came out, Donald Trump was live on TV arguing that the Central Park Five is still, these young boys are still criminals and they should be given the death penalty after they've been exonerated, paid out, and the actual, person that committed the crime has been arrested in jail right now.
Steve, according to you guys' report, it says, quote, I want you to get some good-looking hostesses here. This is what Sue Kwiatkowski says Trump told her. People like to see good-looking people when they come in. And then managers acted on Trump's directives. She and colleagues testified to hire younger and prettier staff. So these are not just women who were the victims of it. These were managers who were saying, yes, he told us to do this.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah. And those are sworn statements and filed in the lawsuits by those women. So they get into a great level of detail about the allegations against Trump personally in some cases.
And you guys also report that the cases involving women are among about 130 employment cases involving Trump's companies dating back to the 1980s. And you said they did. First of all, you did an expansive investigation in what is a total of 4,000 lawsuits?
More than 4,000 lawsuits in which Donald Trump or his companies has been a litigant. And this is in an effort to, in a typical politician, you can look at their track record in public service. Donald Trump, we have to look at his business record. And from these lawsuits is where we see a lot of different allegations against him and his organization.
And another woman, Jupiter, Florida, said she supervised the Trump Kids Club at the Billionaires Golf Resort in Jupiter, Florida, and said Trump, she endured, quote, persistent and unwelcome sexual advances by a manager when Aaron Breen complained, she was fired 2 weeks later.
That's right. And that's a part of a pattern. There's a couple of those allegations in the lawsuits we looked at. That particular case is still open in Florida court. Others have been settled. But there are multiple cases like that. And obviously, the president is in charge of quite a large number of employees, in the government. So it gets to some of the managerial style and oversight.
All right. Steve Rowley, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right, folks. So we're coming up next on News One Now. We'll talk with Green Party VP candidate Ajay Mubaraka to get his thoughts on this election. And also, how can the Green Party increase their vote totals? Also, deadlines, voter registration deadlines are coming up. Yesterday, there were some deadlines in Arkansas. We have about 12 states deadlines today. We're going to give that to you so you know exactly what needs to happen for you to get registered. And also, Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg speaks out about the national anthem protest being led by 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick. But you hear exactly what she had to say, 19 after the hour. News One Now on TV One.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
He is an inspirational and passionate advocate for justice and for human rights.
Well, that was Green Party presidential candidate Jill Stein singing the praises of her running mate, Ajay Mubaraka, during a CNN town hall in August. The international human rights activist, organizer, and political analyst is on a mission to show the Green Party is the proper pick for this election. He joins us right here on News One Now TV One. I'm glad to have you.
Glad to be here.
How do you make the case that in an election where folks say it's a choice between Trump and Clinton, how do you make the case that they should cast a vote for Jill Stein and yourself, and it's not a wasted vote?
We say that if you believe in democracy, if you believe in choice, if you believe in real fundamental change, then the only place to go and the only support you should give is to the Green Party ticket. So we say that our argument is very simple. That if you believe that we have a responsibility to our people, a responsibility to the future, a responsibility to disconnect from the corrupt politics of the status quo, then we have to have the courage to make some courageous decisions, which means we have to break from the two-party monopoly.
But how do you expand the Green Party message where you're above 2%? You look at the current polling data. Politico has a new poll out at Clinton at 42, Trump at 37, Gary Johnson at 12%, and Jill Stein at actually between 1% and 2%. How do you actually grow that and build that where the Green Party becomes a true third party?
Well, we have to go around the control of the corporate media, number one, to take our message directly to the American people. And we're trying to do that. We have a challenge. As long as we have the two parties in collaboration with the corporate media deciding who gets exposed to the American people, it's going to be very difficult. But we have a apparatus in place, and we're organizing. We're going around that blockage. We're taking our message directly to the people. If we, for example, had a chance to penetrate the control of the corporate entity that controls the debates and got a chance to debate, not only will we be competitive, Roland, we would win, because it's clear that the American people are looking for a change. We have two candidates that are the most distrusted, disliked ever in the history of politics. And if they had a chance to be exposed to something new, a new kind of message, a new vision, I think we would make history. But I think the corporate entities and the two corporate parties understand that, and that's why they've been systematically attempting to block us and block our message.
You talked about corporate media, but this is also a question of raising funds, being able to build an infrastructure. You see what Senator Bernie Sanders was able to do during the Democratic primary, but you've been unable to match that. How do you build that? Because if all of a sudden you are generating, like he would often say, the average donation of $27 and raising $20, $30, $40, $50 million, now you have the capacity to run ads, the ability to be able to fund an infrastructure. And so what is the state of your campaign financially?
Well, we were able to take some advantage of the disaffection that many of the Sanders folks had with the Democrat Party when they moved toward the Green Party. And so our fundraising capacity increased somewhat, but we still have a challenge. And that's why it's so important for us to reach that 5% threshold, because if we reach that, then we have a chance to have public financing for the next go-around, and we're going to go again. So it's important for us to get that message out, that if people are really concerned about and want to build a real democracy, then we need to get as many votes as we can. And that will give us some degree of the ability to challenge the corporate monopoly if we have those kinds of resources. But like you said, it's very important to have those kind of resources.
African Americans obviously have a strong affinity for this president. In an interview, you called him an Uncle Tom. Mm-hmm. That didn't sit well with lots of black folks.
Right.
Why did you say that?
Well, one, that was a sort of an internal conversation that before I became a candidate. But it was an assessment that I made that was based on my understanding of the kind of role that this man had, the potential he had as a change maker, and his failure to do that, to basically decide he was going to defend and protect concentrated white power when he had a chance to, in fact, make some real changes for African Americans and other oppressed people in this country. So basically, anytime you make those kind of decisions, then you can be accused of being a 21st century version of Uncle Tom.
Question.
I have a question. I have the impression from reading your materials
and
from reading the Libertarian candidates' materials that your platform is very domestic U.S. and that the President of the United States has to have a global view.
Yes.
I'm not accusing you of not knowing about Aleppo, but I don't have any evidence from looking at your platform that you would be a president that could manage our international dilemmas as much as our domestic.
Well, I think if you looked at a platform closely, if you look at my writing specifically, you would know that up until I became a candidate, I was, in fact, a geopolitical analyst. So I have a pretty decent understanding of the world. So we wouldn't have any problem with having the ability to, in fact, manage the affairs of this state and to engage in international relations with states and peoples around this world. So, yeah, we know Aleppo, we know Syria, and have some very clear positions on all of those issues.
But here's the thing.
Scott.
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
I can agree as a Democrat and as a former chair of the D.C. Democratic Party with everything you say about the monopolization and all that comes along with true democracy, with the Green Party and the Independent Party. At the same time, though, it's going to take time for you to build that, and I want my vote to count now. And while I want my candidate to win, I want my vote to count, and I don't want the Green Party taking votes away from my Democratic candidate, right? So how do you respond to that? Because even if I agree with you, I want my vote to count, and the Green Party is not going to win this election.
But your vote counts. Your vote would count.
By voting, my conscience may count, but I want real access, I want real power, and that comes from voting for a Democrat or a Republican, and in my case, the Democratic candidate.
Now, I say that your vote doesn't count when you, in fact, vote for a Democrat, because the Democrats are not going to challenge concentrated power. That if you're really serious and committed to building an alternative, then you have no other choice but to support the Green Party. You're right. We are building, and we're building for power. So it's not a protest vote. It's a vote for building power. And we say that it's not just about voting in November. It's about building an alternative popular structure, independent politics here in this country.
Yep.
Eugene?
Well, that's interesting. Well, you know, first and foremost, you know, I'm not a person that gets into the habit of defending President Obama, but I will say, when it comes to recent presidents that have done amazing things for African Americans, I think the president probably tops that list. Show me another president that's, yes, you know, commuted, you know, over 1,000 sentences of African Americans that were wrongly, you know, convicted of, you know, nonviolent drug offenses. My question to you guys is, you know, what's your economic plan? You know, I'm a Republican. You know, I believe that, you know, free market enterprise, you know, helps produce jobs, you know, produces prosperity, produces wealth for our citizens. What's you guys' economic plan?
Well, I'm going to tell you, one thing about Obama that we do disagree with is the fact that we don't see the evidence that he was better than LBJ, for example.
Well, I think that's different times, different context.
But the conditions we face seem to be persistent. They seem to be the same. That we have levels of poverty that almost matches what we had in the mid 1960s. So where was the special programs to address urban poverty? Where was the special programs to bail out African American homeowners? Where was the program to address the astronomical unemployment among young people in these cities and in rural areas? There was no specific policies to deal with not only African Americans, but the working class here in this country. So even the Affordable Care Act, we still have 28 million people without health insurance. It was Obama that doubled the belt on our dear sister Assata Shakur. It was Obama that prevented or tried to prevent Aristide coming back to Haiti. It was Obama that gave the cover to the U.S. state not to participate in the Durban process. You know, so where is the evidence that there was something really progressive about this administration? In fact, it was the most backward administration that I think we've seen in quite some time. And morally, it has undermined the status and the position of African Americans like no other administration, because now we have more conservative African Americans than we ever had before.
Well, I think that's that. Whoa.
You got 30 seconds.
30 seconds. Well, I actually think it's an amazing thing that we have more conservative African Americans than we ever have before. I think one of the issues that the African American community has had is that there's been a monopoly on African American political power. You need activity in both parties to actually affect some change in the city.
Final comment.
We say that basically if people are concerned about democracy, they're concerned about real change, you have no other choice but to, in fact, to be a part of the Green Party campaign.
But you got
the Green
Party, first,
right. Green Party mission.
General Baraka, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Folks, election, of course, 28 days away. And we need to give you some critical information when it comes to registration deadlines. But as we have deadlines today in Georgia, Indiana, Kentucky, Louisiana, Michigan, New Mexico, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Texas. Now, Arkansas and South Carolina. In-person registration has closed, but you can register to vote by mail if your registration is postmarked today, October 11th. You can register in person today in all of the other states on the list. Let me give it to you again. Again, Indiana, God, put the graphic back up, please. Thank you. Indiana, I got it. Indiana, Louisiana, New Mexico, Pennsylvania, Texas, Kentucky, Michigan, Ohio, Georgia, Tennessee. Those are the dates today to register in person. Arkansas and South Carolina, you can still register by mail, but it must be postmarked by today. Now, for the folks living in Florida, Governor Rick Scott said he was not going to extend early registration there because of Hurricane Matthew. Well, a federal judge said he was wrong, has extended voter registration in Florida until tomorrow at 5 p.m. Eastern as a result of Hurricane Matthew. And so in Florida, you have that ability. So if you are a Florida resident who's not yet registered to vote in next month's election, you have one extra day. And as we keep saying on here, folks, you've got just one vote. Use it. All right. Coming up next, Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg is flagging quarterback Colin Kaepernick for his national anthem protest. What do you hear what she has to say? Plus, R&B group After Seven has reunited with songwriter and producer Babyface for their new album Timeless. And we'll talk to them later in the show. But also on the show, Deborah Owens, America's Wealth Coach. We're talking about your retirement. All of that, News 1 Now on TV 1.
This is former Congressman Kwesi Umfume. Understand that you only have one vote. Use it. Don't abuse it. Make sure you put it to use on Election Day in a way that liberates all of us to a bright and lasting future.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg is speaking out against the national anthem by Colin Kaepernick in a wide-ranging interview with Yahoo News' Katie Couric. She was asked about her thoughts about the protest during the playing of the national anthem. Here's what she had to say.
I think it's dumb and disrespectful. I would have the same answer if you asked me about flag burning. I said, I think it's a terrible thing to do, but I wouldn't lock a person up for doing it. I would point out how ridiculous it seems to me to do such an act. But it's dangerous to arrest people for conduct that is not doesn't jeopardize the health or well-being of other people.
All right, folks, let's go to our panel. A. Scott Bowling, George Jefferson Neri, Eugene Crick III. Okay, dumb and disrespectful. Now, we know why he's doing it. We understand the purpose behind it. What do you make of her assessment?
I think that when you hear the whole bite here, I think what she's saying is, my personal opinion is, it's dumb and disrespectful. However, in the Constitution, we're not going to arrest him or stop him. We're going to support him doing it.
We played all of that, Joy.
Yeah, what I'm
so it's not like we did. We played that.
I understand.
But I'm talking about, forget the part about arresting. I'm talking about her saying it was dumb and disrespectful.
I think that she has a right to that opinion. It's not my
opinion.
I'm
not asking you whether she has a right to the opinion. I'm asking you about her opinion. Joy, stop being a neoliberal, afraid to... No. Stop being a weak liberal, afraid to... Joy, you're afraid to criticize. You're afraid to criticize a liberal Supreme Court justice. Yes, you are, Joy. Yes, you are.
Roland. First off,
I'm not gonna criticize her opinion. I'm not gonna. I mean, you are jumping.
You gotta let me talk.
Okay.
You gotta let me talk.
I want your opinion on her calling dumb and disrespectful.
I would not call this dumb or disrespectful. I would call this an action that you're supposed to do. My real opinion of her is I actually don't want to know an opinion of a Supreme Court justice. I think she should keep her opinion to herself.
I say, God bless RBG's heart. I think her opinion of this being dumb and disrespectful is dumb and disrespectful.
Yeah, but wait a minute. It may be dumb and disrespectful to her. She's got as much a First Amendment right as he does. Protest is never coming.
No, same
thing.
It's
not about the right. It's about the spirit of the comment.
Eugene. Here's the thing. Let me go ahead and tell y'all this right now. Let me say it right now. If Sam Alito or John Roberts, Clarence Thomas had been interviewed and made that comment, Scott and Joy would not be saying that right now. Y'all are letting a liberal Supreme Court justice off the hook. I'm sorry. She is dead. She is dead wrong. And here's
She's dead wrong for giving her opinion.
Her opinion is dead wrong. It may lead to more black dead men.
And you're free to disagree with her.
That's right. I'm free. First of all, I can.
I like it.
Well, guess what?
It's good.
Guess what? There's one black person on this set who's going to call out liberals, who's going to call out conservatives, who's going to call out Democrats or Republicans. Y'all don't want to say nothing. Coming up next, Deborah Owens will give us some valuable tips to retire in comfort. Back in a moment. Y'all scared to say something. Back in a moment.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
They still whine. All right, y'all, are you ready for retirement? If not, it might because you aren't taking advantage of retirement plans available to you. According to Prudential, only 74% of African Americans contribute to employer-sponsored plans versus 85% of whites. America's Wealth Coach Deborah Owens is here to give you tips on how to maximize your retirement savings. All right, then. So, well, first, how do we get people to spend the time to even get involved with their plans? Because so many people, I don't even want to deal with that stuff. Just I'll get to it.
It's true, and that's why it's National Save for Retirement Week is coming up, and it was created by Congress 10 years ago, really to create more awareness around retirement savings. You know, a lot of things have happened since then as well, whereas before you had to opt in, now they automatically opt you in and you have to opt out. But to your point, Roland, far too many people have kind of fear around even approaching retirement savings. Mm-hmm. So what I wanted to do today was talk about ways, whether you have an employer-sponsored retirement plan or not, how you can take advantage of retirement savings.
All right,
because
first
here's
up.
Yeah, but here's the statistic I want African Americans to understand and why it's so relevant to African Americans in particular is the average couple has less than $5,000 saved in a retirement plan. And you know, we hear the net worth and the wealth gap, but what we have to understand is typically 90% of all of our investments and savings are in retirement plans. So let's talk about what our viewers can do to kind of jumpstart their retirement savings plan.
First up
is start with your employer's plan. Before you do anything, start there. In some cases, your employer is going to match. Even if they're not, one of the problems I find is people say, oh, well, I'm only going to match to what my employer matches. Well, what we've seen since 2008 is that a lot of employers aren't matching. So my tip is try to contribute up to 15%. What we've found that people are most prepared are contributing 15%, but 15% is a lot. So you could start at 5% and then each year increase up 1 percentage until you get to that 15%.
What is my RA? What is that?
My RA is an awesome plan. Well, it's awesome in that what the government has done, the Treasury in particular, has created a retirement savings account that employers can offer to their employees if they don't offer benefits, or individuals can invest in for a retirement account. Now, there's no risk, there are no fees, there's no minimum, but the issue with this account is that it's more like a savings account. So the average return last year was 2%, so not much, but at least it's something.
All right,
make
then
sense?
Self-employed, SEP, IRA, or KEO. Is it KEOs?
KEO. You got it. Right. Go on with your bad self, Roland. So,
I don't know what the hell it is, but yeah. I know how to pronounce stuff looking at it.
Listen, it's been osmosis. So we've been doing these Wealthy You segments.
Like I know how to call something dumb and disrespectful.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay, here
go
we
ahead.
Go.
So what is
right.
that? What is that?
SEP is an acronym for self-employed pension plan, right? So you can create your own pension plan or retirement account if you're self-employed. The benefit to this versus my RA is you're able to contribute a lot more if you're self-employed, up to 25% of earned income, maxing out at $53,000 for both the SEP and the KEOG. The issue is that if you have employees, there is some fine print, so you want to kind of check the details to see which one of those are going to be of most benefit to you.
All right, real quick, what is an open and index mutual fund IRA?
An index mutual fund IRA. So for those people who have less than $10,000, an index fund simply is a basket of stocks that mirrors the market. It could be like the largest being the S&P 500, and that's a way for you to get diversification and earn a higher return than what you would earn if you were in a MyRA or something that didn't carry any risk with it.
And I got 30 seconds, over 50 retirement catch-up provision.
So if you're over 50, you're able to contribute more to your almost $5,000 more if you're in a 401k. Right. So you maximum's 18.5. You can put up to $23,000. So for those people who sent the kids, didn't get to saving for college, now take advantage of that catch-up provision.
Folks, for more information, be sure to go to DeborahOwens.com/news1now for more tips and get yourself straight. All right, Deborah, we appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
Save these folks some money. Coming up next, R&B group After 7 talks about their new music right here on News 1 Now TV 1.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News 1 Now, every weekday morning at 7 on TV.
The ever so soulful R&B group After 7 is back with their new album titled Timeless. Slated for release on October 14th, it reunites the group with songwriter and producer Kenneth Babyface Edmonds after 7 recently stopped by News 1 Now to talk about what brought them back together after 20 years.
We thought that after 20 years, the opportunity to get back into the studio with my brother Face, he thought he had been doing some writing and had some songs I think that he thought would work for us. And of course...
y'all figure he a decent songwriter, so all right, maybe we'll go ahead and see.
All right. Well, one of the most important ingredients was my brother Melvin Edmonds. He's not here with us right now, but he is a very integral part of the sound of After 7. So we weren't really ready to get back into the studio unless he was a part of it. So when he agreed to do it, that's kind of what opened the door.
How different is it being back together today than it was 20 years ago? What has changed the most for all of y'all beyond your age?
I think the fact that we have experience now, we've had some success in the business. We've had the opportunity to do some individual things that help to make us appreciate being able to come back together and the privilege of what we've done in the past. But we just didn't want to come back and be like a little lame duck kind of a act. We wanted to come back only the way that we could enhance what we had done previously. So, you know, we're happy to be here. You know, it's a godsend, it's a blessing, and we're trying to make the best of it.
20 years later, I mean, you guys are now operating in a world where there wasn't Twitter, there wasn't Facebook,
right, so
you know, where now it's not about the album, it's about downloads. And so you're having, you know, even just the, you know, I talked to many artists who said, man, look, if it wasn't for my own social media platform, hey, that's how I'm driving people to come buy tickets to come see my shows.
Right. No,
absolutely.
For sure, for sure. That all of that has changed. So much of that has changed. Many things have changed in the arena of promoting records and so on and so forth. Also, things have changed in the studio as well. I mean, when we first started recording, for instance, this thing called autotune was non-existent. So today, it's a pretty integral part of how people record. So,
because some people can't sing today.
No, I wasn't saying that, but yeah, but no,
I'm
but yeah,
it.
But
I'm saying it.
Okay. So, you know, the advent of autotune, the advent of social media, and all these various platforms, which are very necessary tools today, if you do want to be relevant in the marketplace, you have to figure out how to utilize those tools to do the very thing your friend was telling you about, is let people know you're in the marketplace, come out, buy tickets. There are numerous ways you can utilize the tools today, and we're getting a handle on it.
How would you, first of all, how would you describe the album? What would you call it? What is it? What's the feel? What's the vibe?
Well, I'll just say the title of the album is timeless, and I'll let somebody else describe.
Well, I say it's very well-rounded. I say it'll take you from every emotion throughout a relationship. We all experience the same things a little differently, and this album speaks to everyone's experience, I would say, in and around a relationship. And that's what After 7 has done historically, and we just wanted to continue that same legacy with this album as well.
All right then. Okay, so real quick for each one of you, favorite song on the album. Gotta pick one.
Favorite song for me, this is Keith. There's a song called Home. It's the first opportunity we've had to record a song that has a more of an inspirational value. And I think that it tends to, will communicate with pretty much everybody, no matter what your color, creed, religion is. It's very inspiring.
All right.
My favorite is a song called More Than Friends. It talks about crossing that line from friendship into something a little more provocative. Yeah, you know, being friends with someone sometimes is often drawn by parameters. And once one of the two cross that line, things can get a little different.
Yeah.
All right.
And I think my favorite song is a song entitled If I. It's a... Just a two-word title, but it has so much. It says so much, and it's really a song about regret. About if I could go back and change some of the things that took place back when. If I knew then what I knew now, it could be different. So that's my favorite.
All right, folks, back on News One Now with a couple of deaths in the Black community. Back in a moment.
L. Londell McMillan, attorney and publisher of The Source. You've got one vote. Use it.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
An original member of the Tuskegee Airmen has died. Wilbur Mason served at Tuskegee Army Airfield, where he oversaw property of the U.S. Air Force, including pilot and ground crew equipment. He also studied industrial arts and electrical engineering at Tuskegee University. After retiring as an electrician, Mason served as treasurer for both the National and Atlanta chapters of the Tuskegee Airmen. Wilbur Mason was 92 years old. Former junior welterweight boxing champion Aaron Pryor has died. Pryor had 39 wins and one loss in his boxing career that spanned from 1976 to the mid-1980s. He was inducted into the International Boxing Hall of Fame in 1996 and was named the greatest junior welterweight champion of the 20th century by the Associated Press. Pryor had a close relationship with the late heavyweight boxing champion Muhammad Ali and overcame cocaine addiction. He was known for his two big wins over Alexis Arguello, two amazing fights. He died in his hometown of Cincinnati after a long battle with heart disease. He was 60 years old. All right, folks, it is birthday shout-out time. NBA player Mike Conley, who plays for the Memphis Grizzlies, turns 29. Glad he finally got an outside jump shot. Terrell Suggs, he turns 34, man. Plays for the Baltimore Ravens. He needs some of that skincare stuff right there for them problem. I'm just saying, all right? Rapper MC Light turns 46 years old. Actor Lenny James turns 51. Now, on this day in history, in 1887, inventor Alexander Miles receives a patent for his automatically opening and closing elevator door design. Thank Lord that brother put that together. thank goodness. All right, y'all. Tomorrow on News 1 Now, we'll tell you where more voter registration deadlines are looming, along with a complete state-by-state breakdown. Plus, get ready for laughing it up. It's Wilding Out Wednesday. We'll have some crazy stories for you. You can always follow me on Twitter at Roland S. Martin. You can also friend us the show on the News One Facebook page. Of course, you can also go to my Facebook page as well and go to newsone.com for more stories and updates. And if you see me want to call out these neoliberals who are afraid to speak against Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, just go to newsone.com. I'm talking about these two to my left right here who were a little scared. That's Scott and that's Joy. America, y'all were scared. Stop fronting. Stop fronting, you know I'm not lying. Neo-black liberals, holler!
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.